Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, Newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, Newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at Newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night. Sometimes going to the grocery store can be chaotic. There doesn't seem to be enough time to check the list, make sure everything is there, search for the best prices, and take the time to make sure you got the best quality meat. So, let ButcherBox help you out. Giving you peace of mind, ButcherBox delivers high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust straight to your door. No grocery carts required. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or hormones, 100% grass-fed, free-range, and crate-free. What more can you ask for? What about free shipping, customized box plans, exclusive member deals, recipe inspirations, tips, and tricks? You really can't go wrong with ButcherBox. Sign up at butcherbox.com/morningcup and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/morningcup and use code morningcup to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning.
Cup of murder.
Crimes against children are always harder to swallow. On April 25th, 1971, an unknown serial killer struck for the first time and would, by the end of his reign of terror, take the lives of a handful of young girls, all 18 and younger. So if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. On the evening of April 25th, 1971, a 13-year-old girl named Carol Denise Spinks walked to the 7-Eleven near her Washington, D.C. home to purchase some groceries at the behest of her older sister. It was just a half a mile away and just across the border in Maryland, so she felt comfortable on her journey. Unfortunately for her and her family, this was the exact evening that a man the media would later call the Freeway Phantom decided to strike for the first time. Abducted on the walk home, young Carol's body was found 6 days later just behind St. Elizabeth's Hospital on the grassy embankment next to the northbound lanes of I-295. She had been both physically and sexually assaulted before being strangled to death just a few days before her body was found. While the community reeled over the loss, and while police tried their best to solve what they thought was a one-off crime, on July 8, 1971, Darlenia Denise Johnson, just 16 years old, was abducted while en route to her summer job at the Oxon Hills Recreation Center. 11 days later, her body was found just 15 feet from where Carol's was abandoned. She too was left fully dressed, but was also missing her shoes, just like Carol. And though her remains were far too decomposed to determine a cause of death, there were indications that Darlenia had been sexually assaulted prior to her death. According to the sources, an anonymous caller contacted police about the location of her body a week before the police actually found it and revealed details that only the killer would know. Thankfully, though it wasn't enough to catch the killer before Darlenia's death, an eyewitness was able to come forward with valuable information for investigators. They said that on the day that she was abducted, they saw Darlenia Johnson inside an old black car with an African-American male driving. Believing this to be the man who kidnapped and killed their latest victim, police began searching for a possible person of interest. As they did so, on July 27th, 1971, 10-year-old Brenda Faye Crockett failed to return home after a trip to the grocery store for her mother. Just 2 hours after their concerns started to grow, the Crockett's phone rang, and because her parents were out searching for her sister, the only person there to pick it up was their 7-year-old daughter. At the end of the line was Brenda crying desperately as she told her sister, quote, "A white man picked me up and I'm heading home in a cab." Believing she was in Virginia, she abruptly said her goodbyes and hung up the phone. A little while later, the phone rang for a second time, and this time answered by her mother's boyfriend. Brenda repeated what she said when she spoke with her sister earlier, but added, "Did my mother see me?" and indicated that she was alone in the house with her abductor. The boyfriend asked that she put the man on the phone, and though he heard the sounds of heavy footsteps in the background, Brenda said, "I'll see you," and hung up again. Relaying all of this to officers, investigators surmised that Brenda likely placed the calls at the behest of her kidnapper and was fed inaccurate information in order to try and throw police off of his scent. The following day, the young girl's fully dressed body, again shoeless, was found by a hitchhiker along Route 50 near the Baltimore-Washington Parkway in Maryland. She had been raped and strangled to death with a scarf that was still knotted around her neck. Things remained quiet for the next few months, but on October 1st, 1971, the freeway phantom struck again when he abducted 12-year-old Nina Machia Yates on her walk home from the Safeway store. Her body was found within 3 hours of her disappearance, just off the shoulder of Pennsylvania Avenue, and as with the other cases, she was left dressed but missing her shoes. Found on her clothing, however, were some unidentified green fibers, which were, of course, bagged as evidence. And according to a witness, she was last seen getting into a blue Volkswagen with an unknown driver. Although this lead was investigated, it unfortunately led nowhere. It was at this point in time that the media gave the Phantom his moniker. A little over a month later, 18-year-old Brenda Denise Woodward boarded the city bus at around 11:30 p.m. after dinner with a classmate. Approximately 6 hours later, a police officer discovered the young girl's body covered in stab wounds and strangled in a grassy area near Prince George's County Hospital along an access ramp to Route 202. Unlike the victims before her, Brenda was still wearing her shoes, and a coat was left draped over her chest. Inside the pockets was a note from her killer that read, in a mixture of capital and lowercase letters, "This is tantamount to my insensitivity to people, especially women. I will admit the others when you catch me, if you can." Signed, the Freeway Phantom. Based on handwriting samples, investigators determined that the note, written on paper cut from Brenda's school notebook, had been written by her hand and likely dictated by her killer. Also, given the lack of indications of duress in the writing, they surmised that Brenda actually might have known her kidnapper. For the next year or so, police continued to work the case with what they had, but it seemed their killer had finally gone back into hiding. They were proven incredibly wrong, however, when the Phantom took his final victim on September 5th, 1972. Her name was Diane Denise Williams, just 17 years old, and she was last seen boarding a bus at 11:20 p.m. near her boyfriend's home. The senior in high school was found just a few hours later, dumped along I-295, and, like before, was missing her shoes. Though this time there were no signs of sexual assault, there were traces of semen found that, police assumed, came from her boyfriend. With her death came a victim total of 6, all of which were young, Black, and in most instances, were out doing errands for their family. Girls who were taken far too early by a man who, even to this day, has never been captured, despite the massive interest, the numerous tips, the multi-unit investigation, the few eyewitnesses, and the hefty reward being offered. Unfortunately, because of how long ago the case happened, and because of a common practice at the time that saw files retained by the detectives assigned to the case, the files are now considered incomplete, with some being discarded entirely, and others with missing pages or notes from long-retired or deceased investigators. What they do know is that each of the victims was bathed and redressed prior to disposal, washing away any trace evidence, that green rayon fibers were found on many of the victims, believed to have come from a bath rug or other carpeting in the killer's home, and that the geographic epicenter to the crimes was St. Elizabeth's Mental Hospital. Because the case remains unsolved, all we have when it comes to the killer's identity are the handful of suspects named along the way. People like the Green Vega Rapists, a gang known to have collectively been responsible for numerous rapes and abductions that took place in Washington, D.C., and the surrounding Maryland area. These individuals had a similar MO to the Freeway Phantom, and were each interviewed by homicide detectives inside of the Lornton Prison in Virginia, where at the time, they were serving various sentences. During those interviews, one gang member implicated another, who he claimed told him information about one of the homicides. Making a deal to only give information in exchange for being anonymous, he identified the man who gave him the information and included details not presented to the public at the time. Saying he himself was not involved in the murders, providing a verifiable alibi, when one of the candidates for the upcoming election in Maryland publicly announced to the press that there was a break in the Freeway Phantom investigation, the inmate declined any further interviews and denied providing them with any information to begin with. Another potential suspect, or suspects, is Edward Sullivan and Tommy Simmons. These men, both ex-police officers, were arrested for the murder of 14-year-old Angela Denise Barnes. Barnes, who, at one point, was thought to be an additional victim of the Freeway Phantom. This was later determined to be false. The last real suspect we are going to talk about was Robert Askins, who, in March of 1977, was charged with abducting and raping a 24-year-old woman inside of his Washington, D.C. home. When speaking with the accused, detectives learned that this was far from the first time Robert had been charged with murder. Back in 1938, when he was just a 19-year-old student and member of the science club at Minor Teachers College, Robert served cyanide-laced whiskey to 5 sex workers at a brothel, which led to the death of 31-year-old Ruth McDonald. 2 days later, he stabbed 26-year-old sex worker Elizabeth Johnson to death at the same location, and upon his arrest, he admitted to police that he was a, quote, woman hater. Placed under mental observation at the Gallagher Hospital, he broke free from his restraints and assaulted 3 orderlies with a chair before he could be subdued. During his trial, he revealed that he had been a police informant aiding in the arrest of sex workers. And in April of 1939, he was found criminally insane and committed to a hospital. Just 5 months after his release, Robert Askins strangled 42-year-old Laura Cook to death and, indicted for the murder 2 years later, was accused of several other assaults and retried for that 1938 murder, having finally been deemed sane. He was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to 20 years to life, but in 1958, the conviction was overturned. After the 1978 rape charge, Robert's home was searched by the police in connection to the Freeway Phantom murders. And according to the sources, court documents were found in a desk drawer in which the judge used the term tantamount, the same uncommon word dictated to Brenda Woodward in that Freeway Phantom note, and a word that allegedly he used in his vocabulary regularly. Though no physical evidence was found connecting him to the murders, many believe that he is the man responsible for the murders of Carol Denise Spinks, Darlenia Denise Johnson, Brenda Faye Crockett, Nina Machia Yates, Brenda Denise Woodward, and Diane Denise Williams. Unfortunately, Robert Askins died inside a federal correctional institution on April 30th, 2010, at the age of 91, having gone to his grave denying his involvement in any of the crimes. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to A Terrible Thing Happened on April 26th. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there's always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.